March 21st, 2017, Masoret. Today we're going to be taking up something in Vayakhel. The story of the Mishkan. The Mishkan takes up a lot of space, starting with the materials, what materials are required, and then the dimensions, and the same and then pertains to the garments of the Kohen. And now this parsha, Vayakhel Pekudei, those are the last two parshios, talks about the actual construction. So a lot of the ideas are repeated. It's not clear to me why the Torah goes into such extensive detail, but there's a very interesting point in Vayakhel, where it's, as I said, it's talking about the activity, the implementation, where they implemented the instructions of Moshe. Well, the Mishkan makes a big deal about that, that everything was very, very precise. And the artisans were given virtually no room, which I believe is an important point. It's contrary to the approach in other religions where, you know, if you go into the churches and they have tremendous architecture or art, the Sistine Chapel and so on and so forth, it's really, everything is done in accordance with the imagination of people. Could be great artists, because supposedly that's great art. So I have nothing to say on that. I'm far from being any kind of a connoisseur when it comes to art. But let's assume that it's really quality. Let's assume that it's inspiring and so on, because that's what people seem to feel moved by these things. And perhaps the goal is to inspire, and let's assume it's successful. A thought just came to mind with regard to that. So the Torah does not gear itself towards that. The Torah does not ask for, it does ask for the skilled artisans who have tremendous skill to come forward, but not because of their creative capabilities. I assume there's two aspects to art. One is the creativity, the vision that the artist has, what he wants to capture. It's his vision. So, you know, that's where I assume it's different. Like if it's a portrait of some big personality, so let's assume it's a good portrait. But you'll say, so what do you have to put all that energy into making a portrait? Today you take out your phone, your iPhone, whatever, and you take a picture. So what's the big deal? Or what's the necessity? So I assume the answer is because the artist is making a statement. That is, the way he's depicting the person is telling you something. It's an interpretation of the person. So I assume that's a great portrait, because it paints the person in a certain light, based upon the insight of the artist. So the artist has an insight, but he also has the technical ability to get it down on the canvas. Okay, now the same is true with those who can sculpt and create objects, ornaments, and so on and so forth. So in the building of the Mishkan, you know, so Moshe called upon the people, those who had these skills. The Ramban talks about where did they develop these skills, because they didn't, he assumes that they didn't have the proper training in Egypt where they were slaves. But that's a separate point. But the purpose of the skills over here is not the creative aspect. Of course, these are people that had tremendous wisdom. Like Bezalel, it's pointed out that he had tremendous wisdom. Okay. But that was not so that he would come up with his own ideas, because the form, the shape, and so on and so forth, the tavnus of them, everything was shown to Moshe. And that's what the stories keep repeating. In accordance with everything that I showed you on the mountain. So it would appear that there's no creativity. And then it makes a significant point about that continuously, that Moshe and Aaron and they did everything according to the way God had commanded. So I just had a thought that I'm not saying this is the only idea, but it seems to me that it reinforces the idea of revelation. That is that the fact that we are making it according to a blueprint means that this blueprint has been handed down to us, has come down to us. It's not something that we've concocted with our imagination. That is, they did not, no human being decided that the covering of the ark should have the Kruvim. Each one coming from one corner of the covering, and with the wings going upwards, and so on and so forth. So all this is an expression of revelation, as opposed to other religions where it's the artist. Because there is no revelation. There is no revelation of Christianity. There is no revelation of Islam. That's purely in their imagination. They want to believe that there is, but there isn't. And that's why they have nothing. They want to build a church or whatever it is they want to build. Either they're going to try and copy and distort something that comes from the Torah, or they're going to give it over to these artists. But the artists will simply operate in accordance with their own imagination. Now, I wanted to focus, take a look at Lamed Ches, that's 38. Pasuk Ches, it discusses the basin, and its base. The basin was essentially like, I guess, some type of a sink. That is where the Kohanim would wash, because washing was an aspect of the service. The Kohanim had to wash at various times. There's a number, especially on Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol had to do the special service and he had to change his garments, because on that day he used the special garments of the Kohen Gadol as well as the regular garments of the Kohens and so on. But every time he would change, he had to immerse himself a number of times, and he had to wash his hands and his feet and so on. So you had the everything that was used had to be made in a certain way. So now it says Vayas Zakior, that they made the, or he rather, it's singular. It's a reference either to Bezalel or one of the other artisans who did this kind of work. And he made the Kior of copper. He made the basin of copper and its base of copper. Now then it says, B'maros HaTzovos, HaShetzavu Pesach Ohel Moed, which is not easy to translate, okay? But we'll go with I have the Chumash here with the translation. With the mirrors, Maros are mirrors. HaTzovos of the throng would be it's a reference to the women, throng of women, who massed, meaning who gathered, at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So apparently, the ones who donated, the Mechiza Neshaya, the Unkelah says, that when it came to the basin, the contribution to the basin was made by the women, which already makes it interesting, because what's so specific? The women contributed just like the men, the various materials that were needed for the Mishkan. But here it's making a point, and it's, there's something unique about these mirrors, as you probably have learned. So let's take, because there's the famous Pshat of Rashi, which is what I want to focus on. But before we do that, let's take the Eben Ezra. All right? Because what motivated the women to get involved in this particular donation? So he translates, the Ebenezer translates it, that's the translation. Maros is mirrors. So then he says that he translates Hatzovos that did service. Okay. So he said, this is the quote from the Ebenezer. Scripture states this because it is the custom of all women to beautify themselves. They look at their faces in brass or glass mirrors every morning to arrange the head coverings upon their heads. The custom of Israel was the same as the Muslim practice unto this very day. He means the Muslim practice of covering, the women covered their heads. I don't know if it's the same. I mean, they have what's called the burqa. They cover, well, I guess there's different ones. Some cover their entire face. Some just cover the head and the forehead, whatever. But, so he's saying that the women use the mirrors. Now he says, these women gave their mirrors as a free will offering because they had no need to beautify themselves. They rather came daily to the door of the tent of meeting to pray and to hear the words of the commandments. Scripture states that did service. Atzavu. Ashetzavu. Okay, it's a very complicated pasuk. But Ashetzavu, the women that prayed, or that did service, rather. He translates it that did service at the door of the Ohel Moed. He says the Torah mentions it because there were many such women. Okay, so that itself is very, very interesting. Okay. We will take up Rashi's Pshat momentarily, but before we do so, I wanted to take up the Ebenezer, and then the picking up the Ramban. After he goes through his critique, of Rashi. So he says it makes sense to say Bederech HaPshat, in accordance with the Pshat, because Rashi has a different sort of a midrashic interpretation, that the basin and the base were made from the mirrors of the women who came Tzva Gadol. Okay, tzva, the term tzva is like army, but it means a great, a big gathering. A big gathering of women came, and they gathered by the door, or the opening, of the Ohel Moed to give their mirrors as an adava, as a donation, nidvas libman, the donation of their heart. The Ramban above that, he quotes Unkelus, and he says, Notim Dvarav L'Divrei Rabbi Avraham, that his words are the words of Unkelus, are, you know, tilt, or in the direction of the words of Avraham. That's the Ebenezer. She'amar shehayu anashim ha'ela ovdos Hashem, that these women were women who served God. Visaru mitavas zeha olam, and they turned away from the taiva, the desires of this world. Okay. V'nasnu marosehen nadava, and they gave their mirrors as the nadava. And then he mentions what we said before. They came every day. So there's, I mean, it's cryptic. It's only a few words. But the implication seems to be that these women were on a very high level. And they sort of use this as an opportunity to relinquish vanity. Because the mirror reflects vanity. You know how you look. You want to look good. So, but basically, I mean, every woman has her own stuff, whatever it is. Her mirrors, her combs, her lipstick, whatever it is. Because, I mean, in general terms, because today men are also very much into the vanity. But, I just hold on for a second. Yeah, hello?
Yeah, I'm at...
So apparently, according to this, there were women that were very inspired. Oh, I was starting to say that, I don't mean that men are also involved in this. But I think as a generalization, it's something which is more significant to women. You know, not... Because a man, very often, he doesn't care. It's not that significant. Because he doesn't do... He doesn't put on lipstick. He doesn't put on powder, you know. So maybe if his hair, he just combs his hair back or something. It's not that important. But for a woman, I, in general, you know, some more, some less, but everyone generally wants to do the basics. Doesn't want to be seen. Maybe it's embarrassing even to be seen without at least the basics, the rudimentary cosmetics. Cosmetics is something that you generally would relate more to a woman. But here they were kind of relinquishing it, which is a very, very interesting point. And that is that they elevated themselves. They would come to the Mishkan apparently had that effect. I mean, the Torah and then the Mishkan. That's what the Ibn Ezra emphasizes. Ki mishpat kol hanoshim lis yaipos. It is the, you know, the general practice of women to beautify themselves. Now, apparently, as he says, v'hinei ho'ib Yisrael noshim ovdos Hashem. There were amongst the Jews women who served God, shesaru, that turned away from the taivos of this world. And they gave their mirrors as a nedava, because they no longer had a need to beautify themselves. The truth of the matter is that the idea of, I mean, because the Rambam talks about the concept of moderation, and that is that, and Chazal, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with, you know, God created the Yetzirah Tov, God created the Yetzirah, you know, the good inclination and the bad inclination, and you should serve God with both. The Rambam makes a very, very significant point that a person is not permitted to turn away from the path of moderation in either case, in terms of indulgence or in terms of deprivation. And he says a person that does that is a sinner. And that is following, that's like he mentions, like the idolatrous priests. That's a concept that's associated with idolatry. That man afflicts the body. The affliction of the body is pleasing to God. That's the Rambam says that person is a sinner, because he must maintain himself in the most appropriate condition, and he should partake of things of this world, the basic necessities, physical and psychological and emotional, so that he maintains himself physically and emotionally in the best possible state so he could serve God properly. So in general terms, this type of thing of just renouncing the beauty, I mean, it would seem at first glance to be contrary to the ideal of moderation. So it's a little bit strange, but I think we can explain it. All things being equal, for ordinary people, I don't think it's a good idea in general for women to cease to be concerned about how they appear. Because first of all, you have to consider your husband, you have to consider the community, and so on and so forth. So within reason and with moderation and with modesty, there's no contradiction between modesty and a pleasant appearance. So that's something which is important. Okay, but this is seems to be an unusual case. And it's interesting because you always, you did have, the Gemara does talk about certain great men that even didn't get married. I believe it was Ben Azai. Because the Torah says that Torasso Omnoso, Torah is his profession, which means, it doesn't mean it's profession in the sense of making a living out of it. It means that someone who's completely absorbed in Torah and doesn't take off to work and so on and so forth, he's completely absorbed in Torah all the time. So he's putter, he's exempt from procreation. He doesn't have to get married. So, and that's, now, all the great rabbis, Rav Moshe, and so on and so forth, have paskened that such a person no longer exists. We no longer, we're not on that level. We don't have any people that are on that level of absolute total dedication to Torah, that they don't turn away to anything else. But, you do see that, see, I would say that, what would the Rambam say about the, you know, great, great Torah scholars that are completely absorbed in Torah? And they don't indulge in any of the pleasures of this world. To the extent that it's, you know, it's sort of like an extreme, if you want, the extreme of abstinence, because they don't have any need for it. They don't have if a person naturally develops and he strengthens that part of him, that element, which is purely involved in ideas, and he has no real need for the ordinary, well, that's what's going to happen. The more a person develops and the higher they, you know, the higher level that they reach. So it does have an effect because you begin to look at the world differently. I mean, it's kind of like the story of, kind of like the story of Shimon ben Yochai, who was in the cave, because he had to escape from the Romans. But he basically did not partake, him and his son did not partake of any of the physical pleasures of this world. They were completely absorbed in ideas the entire time. So that has an effect, because the Gemara says when he came out and he saw a farmer wasting, he thought he was wasting his time. What are you wasting your time with? Preoccupations of this world, and you're abandoning the world to come. So what was the story, that a fire went out and burnt them? It was the way the Gemara described it, that he would look at, they would look at them, and a fire would come out and burn them. It's not meant literally. And then he was sent back in the cave because he was basically destroying everything. Now I think that, I'm not saying that this is all it represents, but I think part of it means to say that as a result of that experience, he was so removed from these, what he regarded as these petty concerns of this world, that it was like a waste of time. So he had to get a completely different perspective. But you do have that concept, though, that for a person to reach a certain level of appreciation of what truly matters, you know, great, great ideas, then he contrasts that with the mundane, and he's going to withdraw all of his energy from that. It just has no need. He has no need of these things, because he sees that they're completely empty. It's like Hevel Hayofi, beauty is vain. So that I don't think is a violation of what the Rambam is saying, because that's a natural result of following a certain path. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he reached a certain level of nevuah, so he separated from his wife. He was completely involved in the metaphysical. Wasn't an ordinary, inhabitant of this world, so to speak. That is different. What the Rambam is talking about is someone that's not on that level, an ordinary person, and this ordinary person does have these needs. It's interesting that people can be in a state of conflict with their own basic makeup. There is such a religious mentality, and it's dangerous because it makes people feel bad that they are ordinary humans, and they feel guilty. It creates a certain sense of guilt because you enjoy certain physical things. However, a person has to know his nature, and he has to operate and serve God with his nature. And if his nature is that he does have these needs, then he should deal with that. And obviously, he has to gratify them in accordance with halacha, but according to the principle of moderation. And if he takes a position because of a false sense of piety, because he believes that there's something wrong with man having a physical nature, so he takes the position in which he sort of like tortures himself. He goes to extremes of deprivation, thereby thinking that he's now a holier person, and that this is what God desires. That's what the Rambam is condemning. However, if that is not the case, he has no such idea, but he naturally grows. When a person now grows, he outgrows. He outgrows. There's a lot of things, and I experienced it when I was intensely involved. You know, I was younger and I was really getting into the world of learning, but I came from the ordinary world, and, you know, sports and watching football and so on and so on. I remember that those things no longer had the same appeal. It got less and less interesting to watch a football game and so on and so forth, because I'd rather have my mind dealing with these ideas and these concepts, Gemara and Halacha and Chumash and whatever it might be. So the other things kind of paled. They lost their allure. They lost their attraction. It wasn't a from kind of thing that I was saying, oh, this is wrong to waste your time. But as I said, it was a natural, it's going to be a natural development. If you bring yourself into the world and naturally, more and more and more involved in ideas and the enjoyment of ideas and the insights, then it is going to cause, it's going to effectuate a change. Men or women, it doesn't matter. You'll see. As I said, I don't know if you've experienced this yourself, but I think you'll be able to relate to the idea that, you know, if women get together every week or men get together, it doesn't matter. And so men play cards and engage in, you know, pretty much nonsensical discussions, and women play mahjong or whatever it is they do. And then you sort of, for whatever reason, you're introduced into the world. You know, you start to go to a shir, a Rambam shir, and you're intrigued by the questions, the idea, the analyses. So eventually you're going to lose interest in the other things. It's going to seem so meaningless and petty and a waste of time. Just a natural thing. Because being involved in learning has a transformative effect on the person. It can have, on a certain level, it can make you lonely. Because, you have no one to really talk to. Because the kind of conversations that you used to engage in aren't really that satisfying anymore. And you don't have that many people that share the same interests. So it's very, it's hard to have a friend that you could talk to seriously about. You see, because most people, whatever the subject is, because most people approach everything from the ordinary, from the emotional, the popular views, but there's no real insight. And once you reach the level where you analyze things and you become objective about things and you're not politically correct, so you just deal with the concepts and the ideas, so then it becomes difficult to enjoy conversation with people that don't function that way. Anyways, to get back to the point over here, I'm just saying that this is what's interesting about this. Well, first of all, these women that gave up their mirrors is, I would say two things. That it's not because there's anything wrong. It's not making the point that they got rid of the mirrors because the mirrors, it was bad, it was wrong. You shouldn't indulge in that, what we would call vanity. That's not the case. Because they were noshim v'maros hatzovos. The tzovos. That indicates they were a special group. And they did it because they became involved in a different world. And once they became involved in a different world, these mirrors no longer had any significance to them. And they wanted that it... See, it wasn't just breaking the mirrors, but they should be utilized for a higher purpose than the Mishkan. And you could see that the very act of giving to the Mishkan itself propelled the person. And that's what we said at the outset by the Truma concept, that God did not impose a tax on the people, but that the building of the Mishkan had to be accomplished by the people. The people had to make an investment, so to speak. And by making an investment, that would connect them to it, and the ideas and the learning and so on and so forth. So what you see, though, is that this phenomenon of transformation, of reaching a level where ordinary gratifications, beauty and so on and so forth, can be transcended. This kind of thing is not limited to just men, but women can as well. Because you see that's according to it's the plain pshat. The plain pshat of the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra was that the concept behind it was to be able to rise above ordinary vanity. So that's an important concept. And it kind of goes against that idea, where women are sort of looked down upon in terms of spiritual development. Even though that's not an idea of the Torah, because the Torah presents women, Sarah, and disagreeing with Avram, and so on and so forth. When I say the common idea, I mean among many Jewish communities today, that sort of, they don't take women seriously in terms of their spiritual level. I mean, they take them seriously in terms of their, the responsibility to have kids and raise the kids and take care of the house. But in terms of their spiritual qualities that are outside of that arena, there are places where, they don't take women seriously. But here, this would seem to go against that, because this was a special group. And then the reason, I think part of the reason why women may not be taken that seriously is because of the perception that they're only concerned about, the vain things, the vanity. And since at bottom that's what they care about the most, so they're not really serious people in terms of abstract ideas and, thought and so on and so forth. But here you see that they can transcend. They made a contribution which was unique, because a person can contribute something which is valuable and so on and so forth, but it's not something which is central and fundamental to his sense of self. Just an object that he has. He can give a beautiful watch because it's got gold and silver, which he likes a lot. So that's a painful sacrifice, but he does it because he recognizes the importance of the Mishkan. But that doesn't change his nature. That's not going against his basic nature. It's just a particular object. But in giving away the mirrors, they were giving something up. They were giving a fundamental, something which is kind of fundamental, and as I said before, I think it's more central to women than even to men, because there's nothing wrong with that. Because women care about their appearance. So, that's an interesting idea. I mean, it doesn't mention anything about the men. Doesn't mean that no man gave copper or whatever. But for the men to give up the mirrors would not have been such a big deal. Because the whole thing is not that important to them anyways. In general terms, as I said. That whole area. It's a good question. What is the message or the teaching? I was kind of trying to convey that. Maybe I didn't get it clear enough. I think it's something you got to be very careful about. Because sometimes people are inspired by a noble deed to want to emulate that deed. And if they're not on that level and they're not ready for it, it becomes very destructive. You know, like, that's what I'm opposed, you know, like, all the biographies of Gedolim and, you know, how he, you read about these people who didn't waste any time and devoted all their time to learning, and then you get inspired by that, but you're not that person. You don't have that ability, and you try to emulate. If you try to emulate something that you're not on the level for, then not only won't you attain it, but it's going to be a setback. It's very dangerous, because then you go off into depression and you tend to give up the whole thing. I think a lot of it's not the only cause of the assimilation today, but a lot of off the derech, a lot of kids from the frum backgrounds wind up giving the whole thing up because it's made to, you get the feeling that in order to be in, you gotta be capable of all the sacrifice, and you try it and you fail and you feel like worthless. So that's clearly the case, but the takeaway, I think, is that there's the other side of the story, that a person is not locked in, neither men nor women, we're not locked in to where we are at this point in time, and that the things that we think that we do need and that are extremely important, very often it's not because that is the case, it's simply because of our level in general. It's the extent to which we can appreciate the higher things. When we attain a level where we can appreciate higher things, then this will affect us in terms of what we view to be necessities. That's a teaching, but you got to be very careful in implementing it. Making a comment, and the importance of grooming and women caring about their parents, and to a lesser extent perhaps men, is very important. If this is taught in the wrong way to a group of young girls, it can have a very negative effect. Because if you're just taught without any type of interpretation, so she's going to feel bad because I really like my mirror and I like to get a certain look and I put so much energy into that and look, and that's so petty of me. It's not correct. Because in its context, in the proper context, it's very important. Because, especially when you're younger. You see, but hopefully as a girl, I'll use the example of a girl because we're talking about appearance. As she matures and enters into obtains a greater appreciation of the finer things, and that should kind of like sort of moderate. Doesn't have the same hold on her. That's progress. The progress of an individual has to do with their values and what is important and what is secondary. Unfortunately, as we're growing up, the things that are truly secondary have pride of place. There's nothing more important than them. And the things that are truly important are really downgraded. But you should go through a transformation. But that transformation shouldn't be forced on you. It should be a result of natural growth. So
right, it has to be the result of natural growth.
Yeah, so these things, this is an important point. These things are important. But to recognize their importance or the type of importance that they have, that's a very important factor. That they shouldn't be blown out of proportion. They should be in line with reality. And the concept that as we grow, they assume less and less importance, and if one reaches a certain level and puts things in perspective, then they have virtually no importance. That's something which can be taught, can be understood, should be there. That's not going to be a harmful kind of thing. That's not going to, because, you know, the other side that emphasizes How, like in our society today, you got the other extreme, because it doesn't recognize the value of knowledge and learning. It only recognizes the superficial. So you have the problem where, you know, girls that aren't, they don't think they're that good looking, so they feel bad about themselves. Or, you know, if they gain weight, then, you know, like, I don't know if the problem is still there, but there was a problem in the, even the Jewish community, the frum community, with anorexia. Because girls was, you know, were so pressured that they won't get a shidduch and they have to, they can't gain an extra pound. See, that focus, that concentration on the externals, I mean, that's, if I was giving a talk about that, I'd bring this in. That we are emphasizing, and this is in the frum world, we're putting such a tremendous emphasis on the externals, where it does pose a health risk, which is, obviously, that's serious and it's wrong, but from a completely different perspective, it's contrary to our values. While it's reasonable, I mean, a girl, it's reasonable to expect, especially, you know, young people going out, that each of the guy as well as the girl should make a nice appearance, pleasant. That's a very important thing. But to take that to the extreme, and, you know, where it actually can endanger your health, is dangerous and it's wrong and it's a violation of our concepts. So it helps us to put these things into perspective. The person has to understand that the way we look at certain things is not necessarily because these things are important in their own right, it's because of the perspective that we're coming from. And as we mature and gain a greater insight into the true values, then this will affect how we look at these things. That I think is a healthier approach, as opposed to just saying these things are bad and we should eat Sahara and we should give them up and so on. That's not the correct approach, and it's certainly not beneficial. But I think it's also, it's inspiring to know that this is a high level. Not everybody can attain it, but the fact that there are people that do attain it, and I, as I said, additionally, it's not just men, but women can attain it too. I think that's a very inspiring idea.